Welcome to Empowered, Mind Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we have Shayna Francesca.
Shayna is a speaker, writer, and entrepreneur. She is founder and lead designer at Consonate. Thank you. A multidiscipline interior designer and life design firm. Shayna believes our lives are transformed when we infuse our lives with intention. So lovely to have you.
Yeah, thanks.
Interesting. Yeah. So help me pronounce your life design firm.
Consonate.
What a beautiful name. So yeah. What does it mean exactly?
Maybe I had a feeling you were going to ask me that. Not everybody does, but I had a feeling you were going to ask me that. So I'm grabbing my phone because I love to just read the actual definition. Yeah. Because it's so beautifully written. So it means to arrange or blend together skillfully as parts or elements put together in a harmonious, precisely appropriate or elegant manner.
Oh, how beautiful.
Yeah.
So you combine interior design with life design.
Yeah.
Is that right? That's so unique. I love it.
Yeah.
So tell me how this came about, this idea.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So the idea morphed over time, like many things do. You know, I went to school for interior design. I have my BS in interior design. And, you know, at first I just envisioned myself doing like corporate design work, but I started out doing residential. And really the story that gets me to being an interior designer, we could go back and say, you know, really I became an interior designer because my life was complete hell. Growing up, I grew up in what I now understand to be a cult. I grew up evangelical Christian and wasn't allowed to question. Fear was used to manipulate and control. And, you know, my very first memory is of sexual assault. I was 3 years old. And so my life was marked by these really horrific things. And that was just like the beginning. That isn't even like the summation. That isn't even like an outline. That's just like the beginning of the story.
Yeah. That was a religious, in what you say is a cult now, because you weren't allowed to question and you had to follow.
Well, there's certain criteria that, you know, cults fall under. And, you know, when you are, I now understand it to be a death cult. I mean, people can dive into that, you know, on their, you know, more on their own time. That's like a whole conversation in and of itself. And I don't really want to focus on that aspect, right? But what it did do is, me having such a traumatic early story, is it made me realize that I didn't want that to be my story. And even though I didn't have control of my life story yet, you know, not fully, I recognized that my imagination was my place for escape. And so I spent a multitude of time reading, you know, especially English literature, early English literature, like the greats, you know, and recognizing, you know, at some point I recognized that it was through these kind of stories that I was reading and, you know, connecting with authors like Eleanor Roosevelt, et cetera, I started to recognize it wasn't that life pervasively sucked. It was that mind did. And that recognition, that delineation between life sucks, you know, that pervasive understanding, and then the recognition that actually it was just my life that sucked, meant that I could change something. And I didn't know how, and I didn't have the resources, and I didn't have people around me as mentors. So books, you know, became my mentors, and I started kind of creating my own version of a vision board. I just used my bedroom wall as a vision board and really just started to figure out, what does it look like to change my life? Even if I can't ever get to this place that I'm imagining for myself, how do I get out of where I am? And so I used that you know, and then my understanding became that, like, my home, my bedroom, I didn't have control of my home because I was a child, but I did have control of my bedroom. And I started to recognize it was the stage from which I was telling the story of my life. It was where I spent a great percentage of my time. It was my safe space. And really, I think that's what pushed me into becoming an interior designer, is the combination of my imagination and understanding the power of the space that surrounds us and understanding it to be a reflection of our beliefs about ourselves. And then, you know, spending, you know, I've been an interior designer now for 17 years. When I started my business again, I thought I was just going to do, I did corporate for 10 years and then maybe 12, and then struck out on my own. And when I did, I thought, okay, I really want to get back to my roots. I actually really want to do residential now. I want to work with people's homes. I want to take these ideas that I had as a child, and I really want to allow them to grow into something and really help people to design authentic space for my clients, space that authentically reflects them. And by diving into that, then I started to recognize the power of designing our lives and living our lives from a place of intention and creating our homes from a place of authenticity and intention, really aligning them with the story we want our life to tell.
How beautiful.
Yeah.
I find that the most amazing stories come out of, you know, a need to take control of your own life at some point, right? And I was in retail for a number of years, and I realized the magic and the beauty of making someone feel good in their own clothing, let alone in their own space. I've always been aware of that, but it's so beautiful that you help people with that. And then because of your childhood, it grew into something even more. So yeah, let's hear more about that, how you help people with life design.
So what I adapt this language based on the client, you know, and who they are and where they are in their life and what language would make sense to them, right? But just for our purposes, what I really sit down with clients and do is understand the story their life has already told, right? Like what have they done with their life? Who are they? And who do they want to be? What story do they want their life to tell moving forward? You know, and that is like each individual person in a family. And then also, you know, if it's a single person or a couple with kids, like that dynamic kind of changes, and recognizing that each person needs to feel reflected in their home. And there needs to be a weaving of these stories if there's, you know, multiple people involved in a family. And creating space that authentically reflects that collective story and that individual story, because we each need to feel seen and connected to our home. And so it's really important that everybody have a part to play in that and everybody feel reflected in their home.
And
establish a style for the home, you know, that is an amalgamation of who we are as human beings, right? Because we aren't one thing, right? So like, there's not just like, I don't just pick a style and then, you know, stick with that. It's more about what are the interesting things that this person has collected throughout their life? How do we use them? And then how do we incorporate new things, you know, where necessary? And sometimes we're kind of having to do all new things. but I still like to incorporate maybe accessories or different things from their life as inspiration. Mm-hmm. And really just make sure that that it feels authentic to them. There's people like to ask me, what's my style? What's my design style? But I have absolutely nothing to do with it, right? It's the way that I describe it is I'm creating a space that reflects the way that I see my clients, who they are authentically. But it's not a reflection of me in that it's not my style. It's a reflection of me only in that it's how I see my clients.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Like often, you know, an interior designer comes in and they might pick up a couple things that the person is passionate about, but often it becomes, you know, they're just creating a space of beauty. Mm-hmm. Isn't necessarily the client's, the client's life story isn't seen in the home.
No, not necessarily. No, there are some designers who I think are working the way that I do. I'm not specifically aware of their work, but most designers, you see them, you know, connect to a specific style of their own. And there's reasons for that, because, you know, it's great marketing when you create a very specific design style and it makes your work recognizable. And I understand all of that. It just never could I create a design style for myself and replicate that, you know, or adjust that to each client. Sure. But I really love the challenge and the creativity that comes from connecting to who my clients are authentically, and really allows them to tell their story really beautifully. Because ultimately, when they're done working with me, I usually stay in my clients' lives. They use me for years and years, most. But I'm, you know, I'm not living in their home with them. They are. And so it needs to really feel connected to who they are. And the other benefit is that when I'm creating their space for them, rather than connecting it to my style or a specific trend, that means, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now, their space is still going to authentically reflect them. If you were to design a space based on a trend, that trend is gone in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And then you've got to start all over again. And so it really feeds into consumerist culture, which I'm really not a fan of. So, you know, by designing for my clients authentically to themselves, it allows them to grow with and adapt to the space and really like connect to who they are as they move through their life. It allows them to change up the space a little bit, you know, add the pieces of their life as they're moving through it, you know, add different accessories or things in it. And it feels like they have the permission to do that because it's not like a perfectly stamped version of my style, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's what it can often feel like. Like if you infuse your personal touch, it messes with the designers.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And Mark, like my husband and I have morphed into fairly modern architecture. And what we find is that often the soul of the family and the person is lost often in modern architecture and design, because it has to be so, you know, this particular style. So we always just infuse ourselves into it, and then it becomes so much more interesting.
Yes, that's the thing. We're fascinating. Human beings are fascinating. And when we celebrate that, we get to take up space really beautifully and intentionally in this world. We give ourselves permission to take up space beautifully in this world. And that's a really important place to get to know that it's that trend has no place in our life if we don't say it does, right? It doesn't have to have any place in our life, but who we are gets to take up so much space while also knowing that space is infinite. Literally, physics tells us that, science tells us that, and that space is ever expanding. So when we take up space beautifully, it's also about understanding we're not taking it away from someone else. Because when we're intentional about who we are, we know what belongs as part of our life and what doesn't.
Yeah. You also help people love their story and love who they are, which I find really incredible. Can you share a story maybe that, you know, something you designed and in the end, the person saw themselves in an expanded way they hadn't even seen before?
Yeah, I think that happens in some way with every single project, right? Because at the beginning, change is hard. Change is hard, no matter what. And I think because I don't have a specific style, I love the bravery that my clients engage in, right? I create beautiful designs. That's absolutely, you know, not up for discussion, right? Like, I mean, sure, you may not agree that my designs are beautiful, but my clients feel that way, right? So at the end, they're always beautifully in love with their space. So that is never a worry of mine. It becomes kind of like they're nervous at the beginning. right? And they're not sure what I'm going to turn out because it is such a personal process. And so almost every single project, clients get to the end and they're like, I knew it was going to be great, but I didn't know I was going to feel this way about this space, right? Because my clients happily refer me to lots of other people and will describe their own home's design much in the way that I do and add their own adaptation to the story, which I absolutely love. It's kind of like when you meet someone, like your meet cute, you know, like when you met the person you're going to marry, and people are always like, how did you meet? You know, and when you hear the story from both persons' perspectives, there's a different telling, but it's the same story, right? And so it's like that about the spaces I design with my clients. I describe them one way, but I love listening to my clients describe their spaces and how they're like, you know, when we went into this, we knew it ended up with a beautiful space, but we also didn't realize like how she would think about how the dogs and the dog's toys, and like they climb up on top of this table and you wouldn't know it. It's a $3,000 table, but the dogs climb up on top of it and there's not a scratch to be had. It's weathered the storm, you know, and they're play toys don't get stuck underneath of it. So we don't have to go clamoring underneath that anymore. And, you know, there's little parts of the story where I just hear how their everyday life is enhanced, not just by the beauty of the space, but for the thoughtfulness and how it impacts their everyday experience with their own life. Right. Because that's when I talk about like us taking up space beautifully, knowing that we can have a beautiful table or coffee table, or because I'm specifically envisioning this one client's project I had where we did a coffee table that all sides touch the ground. And so the dog toys can't go under there. They have two giant German shepherds. And it's a $3,000 coffee table. And I don't always do $3,000 coffee tables, but this particular one we fell in love with and we just absolutely needed it. And, you know, they used to have to go clamoring under. The wife used to have to keep a wiffle ball bat around to try to get the dog toys out from underneath, you know, multiple times a day. And she doesn't have to do that anymore. The wiffle ball bat disappeared. She doesn't have to go clamoring under the table for the dog toys anymore. Right. Like, and that seems like such a small thing, but in the grand scheme of all the things put together that add up to our day, it's that level of intention and understanding how to construct our environment to allow us to tell our life story beautifully, that changes everything. It's those little decisions that are made with intention that change our lives, not necessarily the big ones.
Yeah, so awesome. Like animals are often a part of our life, and kids so too, fun. Right? Uh-huh. So it's not very often a designer would even listen to how the dogs are in your life. They'd probably try to ban them from the house.
About that. I mean, I know there's, you know, there's a lot of great designers out there. You know, they may not, you know, they're going to listen to their clients and they're going to make these adaptations, you know, that the client kind of puts as necessary requirements, right? But it's not always that way, right? The client doesn't always recognize the impact of the way that I'm watching the way they interact with their family, right? And their animals or whatever. They're not necessarily understanding that impact until we're all done. And they're like, oh my God, I didn't realize that this was going to change my life, right?
Yeah.
It just happened. I'm neurodivergent. So the amount of data that my mind processes at any given moment is like exponential. And so, you know, I'm constantly taking in who my clients are, how they're interacting with one another, how they're interacting with their environment. I always, before I meet with a client, I warn them against cleaning their house. Like, please don't clean it. Please don't organize a single thing. I need to see how you're actually living in your home. I need to take that in so I can see how to fix it, right? Like if it needs to be fixed, if we need it, or not necessarily fixed, maybe that's not the right word, but if it needs to be, if we need to find a way to address it, to incorporate it in your life in a way that makes more sense, I need to see it to know so I can ask the questions, right? So those moments in your home that feel like messes to you are prompts for me.
Yeah.
You know, they're moments for me to be like, okay, let me ask you about this, you know?
Yeah. And if it was all hidden, you couldn't ask.
No, I couldn't ask. I wouldn't have any prompts. Yeah.
So when did you realize that beauty and, you know, what we live in is an important component to how we live?
Oh gosh, I think I was probably like 12 or 13. I recognized that every time something really terrible would happen in my household, there was a big fight or, you know, something, you know, a traumatic moment, that I would feel the need, the compulsion to reorganize the furniture in my bedroom, specifically, and or like change something, right? Like change out my bedspread. I had like two that I would vibe between, or, you know, I would need to reorganize something or change all the stuff on my shelf, or I needed to change something about my physical environment. And it was like, there was this connection between that physical environment and needing to like reset the stage, right? Like in a play, you reset the stage in between acts, and each stage set serves as the backdrop for the next part of the story. And that's how I started to perceive physical space as the stage from which we tell the story of our life. And so it's critical that, you know, as we move along in our story, that our space adapts to that, that we're not adapting ourselves to it, but instead we're able to easily adapt it to our needs, in small ways that don't seem significant, but are, in ways like if we are constantly bumping our leg on a particular piece of furniture walking through space, it's because it's in our walking path and we have a right to take up that space. So if we need to swap furniture down to a smaller size, or we need to move it slightly so that it, on our daily life, it's not in the way, or, you know, it could be as simple as, okay, that's called a dining room technically, but we never use it. So what do I do the most of in my day that I can actually reset that entire room to help me facilitate that thing? Right? It could be that you're a photographer, and that could be, you know, where you set up all of your equipment. It could be that you're a yoga instructor and you just want to clear out that room and have a little table for incense and your yoga mat and your crystals, right? Like, it doesn't have to stay a dining room. There are no rules in our life that we don't choose to accept. We don't have to take those rules on. We don't have to live by other people's rules or societal rules. Mm-hmm. We get to say what the rules are that govern our lives.
Yeah. Well, that in itself is very freeing.
And, yes.
And teaches you to live that way in every aspect, right?
Yes.
So exactly. It's so important that it's in your own home, because uh-huh. It reminds you that there's no rules in life. You can move the couch if you want to.
Yes. Yes. You can take the couch out if you want to. Like my social media person, my marketing person, she, in her, what you would call a living room, she doesn't have a sofa. She doesn't have any seating whatsoever, actually. She, in front of her fireplace, centered in the room, there's this beautiful sculpture of a juggler. It's very beautiful and moving. And that's it. And what's in her dining room is her dance space, right? So there's like two whole rooms in her house that have no furniture. Whatsoever, right? Because there are no rules. We get to do what we want in our home because it's our safe space. It's not space that we create in anticipation in somebody else being in our home and their judgment. That's how we've been taught to regulate our lives. But that's not real if we say it, if we say, no, that's not part of who I am. That's not what I want for my life. I reject that. I'm going to create my home as my safe space. And when I do have people over, I will create adaptations, but they'll be temporary.
Yeah. Love it. Right? Because you may realize that you spend all your time with everyone that's over in the kitchen. So why?
Exactly. Why do you worry about all the other furniture? That's what I say to people all the time. I'm like, no one goes anywhere but the kitchen anyway, and no one spends very much time sitting down anywhere. Anyway.
You probably have to insist they go sit on that couch.
100% you do. And then it gets weird. And it's like, you know what? If I just took all that furniture out, people might actually gather in there more when people are over.
Right? They would walk through to look at the art.
Yeah. But that's not suitable for everybody's life, right? Like not everybody wants to clear out their dining room. Not everybody has the amount of square footage that she has to work with. You know, but it could mean that, like, if you never eat at your dining room table, okay, well, that could be something else, right? Like, most people need a living room. They sit on a sofa. They're going to, you know, hang out somewhere. And somewhere in her house, she does have a sitting area for, you know, for her and her husband. But primarily, those two spaces, they're almost completely empty.
Yeah. Like, it's very radical.
It is, but it isn't. I think that's fascinating to say that it's very radical to make our homes fulfill our wants, dreams, and desires. I don't think that that's radical. I mean, it sounds radical to people, but to me, that just makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Well, it's how we should view our lives and our space, but it's definitely in morph from, you know, you would not do that. At all.
Yeah, I think people are more inclined to worry what other people would think. And that's just because that's what we've been, you know, indoctrinated to pay attention to, right? Is like, you know, you want to fit in, you want to be accepted, you want other people to not think you're weird. But newsflash, we're all weird. I've never met a not weird person in my life.
Well, I agree.
And I don't mean that as a bad thing. I mean that as a good thing. I think people are fascinating. I absolutely love people. And really? I love what I do because of it. Because I get to be the keeper of my clients' secrets. I get to be the keeper of, you know, their most intimate selves, right? When they choose to work with me, they're choosing to open themselves up to me to whatever degree they feel comfortable with, right? But I'm the protector of those things. And I take that very seriously. And I absolutely love my clients.
Yeah. I feel the same as a naturopath. And I find that, you know, after you've listened to many, many lives and much pain and much happiness and everything in between, you realize that we are all a little bit weird. And when you let them know that you're human and that you have these same issues, right, then you can be the keeper and the listener.
Yeah.
So do you ever use feng shui, or do you worry about that? Or
feng shui is something that that I'm aware of, that I have done some learning on, but to be a feng shui master takes years and years of study. So I do my very best to be careful not to use terms and to appropriate language, right? So feng shui is a masterful study. It's one of the most ancient studies of energy and space. The only one that's older than that is Vastu, and that's an Indian art of, you know, of a similar study. It's a very spiritual understanding of space. So I have understandings of that work. But I have not studied it as a master. But many people who have studied those aspects of spirituality and space recognize that I have naturally come to, in many ways, some of the same conclusions that you would find in Feng Shui and Vastu, right? There's a lot of similarities between what I do and how I do it and those studies of space. So I honor that those are centers of wisdom that I have been adjacent to. However, I am not a master of either.
Yeah. So what similarities did you find? Because it can just be as much as listening intuitively to how something feels in placement.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So my connection to my intuition and the way that I listen and my curiosity, and then also my studying the way that people move through their space and watching the adaptations that they make, the way that they move around something that I would rather than be able to move through that space. Right. Mm-hmm. just watching natural walking paths, natural flow through space, orientation of things to the sun and the way that we respond to and connect to the sun, and, you know, our necessary connection for vitamin, you know, for our actual mental and physical health. But understanding these aspects of a space come, you know, kind of have come to me naturally over lots of years of practice and paying attention to how people respond to space. So I would say that's the similarity, is in understanding the way that energy moves through space, mm-hmm. the way that we want to direct our attention and the way we want to direct our movement through space.
Yeah. So it's become a very scientific way of describing what you probably do very intuitively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, again, I didn't realize how much my people watching skills would be beneficial in what I do, or maybe I did. And now I look back and I think maybe I took it for granted. But I've always been somebody who watched people, not in a creepy way, but just observed them mm-hmm. and was fascinated by the way that we interact with one another and our physical environment and with ourselves. And that just became something that I naturally incorporated with what I do. And I'm also, you know, it also allows me to speak to and about things that I notice in my clients' lives as well, like how the way that they interact with their space may reflect what's going on for them personally. And then to be able to connect them, like if necessary, to I have connections and collaborations with psychologists and coaches and so able to connect clients and say, hey, do you want more support on this? Because when we start tearing apart someone's home, it is very personal and it brings up a lot. Change is not easy. And when we start changing space, it can confront certain things for certain clients. And so, you know, I have a team of collaborators that I work with where I can then, you know, if a client is open to that or wants that as part of the process, to bring in these other experts that they can connect with and maybe just do like an hour session with or something, kind of work through what's coming up for them, work through some language and communication, or get, you know, long-term coaching if they so chose. But, you know, it's critical to my observation of what's going on for them and how internally it might be stirring up some things is also really critical that I, you know, am able to bring in people to help support them in that way too.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because, right, like often when you're switching up a space, it might include letting go of some old baggage.
100%. It's almost always about that. Yeah.
And then having the, you know, it happens physically, but then you have to also energetically let it go.
Yeah. Letting go of what no longer belongs.
Right. Otherwise they're not comfortable in their new space without realizing that. That's so beautiful.
Yes. I love that. Yeah, exactly. People, I think they start to, as we dive into the process, start to recognize how attached they are to physical things in a way they didn't anticipate. Mm-hmm. They have absolute emotional connections. And as we start to move through the story, like at first I can sense resistance on people's part to disconnecting with certain physical things. And I don't push it. I never push it. It's always up to the client to decide what stays and what goes. And I will work whatever needs to stay into a design. If I don't feel like I can comfortably incorporate what needs to stay into what they want to accomplish, I just don't take the project. Which it doesn't happen often, but it does happen. And, you know, as the project moves forward and as they kind of see the way that I'm incorporating new pieces, almost always they start to let go of things that originally they were not ready to let go of. But within a, you know, a couple of weeks, they're like, actually, I think, and I'm like, yep, knew it. Right. But it always has to happen on their time and in a way that feels comfortable with them and always with their consent.
Yeah. Well, I've moved now and unexpectedly 3 times. And so each time you have to purge.
Yes.
And each time you realize how little you need and also how you can recreate your space again.
Yes. Yeah, over and over again. Yeah, it's fascinating how we can actually re-envision space when we disconnect from its current, or like the way that it's currently laid out. There's so many, not always, but there are typically, you know, there's more than one answer for, you know, to solve any particular problem, and finding the one that aligns with my clients at that time is really critical, but also gives them flexibility to change things around in the future if they want to or need to.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's actually a practice in letting go and flexibility. And creation. So you can recreate your whole life at the time that you let go and recreate your home. Mm-hmm. Allow it to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, it's so important and much, much deeper than many of us realize.
It doesn't have to be that deep. There's lots of designers who come in and they'll, you know, the client says what style they want the space to be, and that's the style is moved forward.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's not every designer works the way that I do. And clients who want just one particular style and that's what they want to move forward with, and they don't want to have these deeper discussions, I work on projects like that too, right? Like, you know, we'll make that work as well. Right. It's like I said, it's always with the client's consent that we kind of dive into these deeper things, but ultimately in some way or another, even if it's at a very like more surface level, these kinds of conversations and intersections happen. Throughout the project.
And sometimes it's baby steps, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because not everybody grew up in an environment, most people, I would argue, you know, of especially my clients, because all of my clients are over the age of 50, you know, didn't necessarily grow up in an environment where they were encouraged to find, tap into, and allow their self-expression to be seen, you know, in their home. And on their physical selves, you know, there was a suppression in many ways of self-expression.
Yeah. And to have like often it is, you want to portray this feeling of perfection, right? Which none of us are.
So yeah, there's no such thing.
Yeah. Like there's no such thing.
Literally no such thing.
So the more of yourself and that little bit of imperfection that comes forward is so much more interesting.
Yeah. And I'm trying to find new language around that because I don't believe in perfection. I also then don't believe in imperfection. Right.
Right.
I think that it is an expression of our authentic selves, but you know,
that's better. I love it.
Yeah. It's just an expression of our authentic selves. And when we say that, it's not in comparison to anything, right? Because when we say imperfection, it's that word is in comparison to perfection. Yeah. And so, you know, I love to remove that language. I'm working to remove that language from my own lexicon and replace it with, you know, words that are more accurate and it being, you know, an authentic representation of, you know, who we are at our core. I think that that's more accurate for me. That feels more accurate.
Yeah. I'm becoming more aware that most humans are imperfect.
Yeah. There's no such thing as perfection. So we all are call imperfect. Yeah.
I love how you reframe it into authentic because that's the goal. And it's so beautiful that, you know, you went through this hard time as a child and you became very empathetic and a real listener. You know, listening is quite the skill and such a gift to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And growing up, I thought I was a terrible listener, but what I learned in fact was that my dad specifically, but my parents believed children should be seen and not heard. So I thought anytime I spoke, that I was like in violation of that silent agreement, right? That I should be seen and not heard. And then I came to realize that I actually listen more than people think I do. And I do talk a lot, but I listen more than people think I do because my brain processes so much information that I'm taking in things at a much greater pace than I think a like a neurotypical person would. And so I'm fascinated by how much information I collect and can recall, you know, about my clients that I'm able to incorporate in projects.
Yeah. Well, you're doing the perfect life path, aren't you?
I mean, it feels perfect to me. I mean, and now, you know, Consonate has expanded, you know, I'm not just, because it started out as just an interior design firm and under a completely different name. And then I rebranded to Consonate. Once I found that word and that definition, I was like, that is perfect. If perfection existed, that would be perfect. And now have expanded as, you know, doing a lot of writing, and I also am a public speaker, and really being able to share this work with people, even if I'm not designing their home, being able to encourage them, you know, having these conversations, you know, within themselves, and being able to transform their space, even if I can't be there.
Yeah. Inside and out. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do people find you or more of you if they wanted to, you know?
Yeah. Connect with me. I would love if people would connect with me. The best way is through my website. There's lots of information about the company, about who I am, why I founded the company, and me as a speaker and a writer. And it connections and links to my speaker profile, et cetera, is all on my website and my contact information. So it's all there. And it is consonate.world, and it's consonate.world. And I'm sure it'll be linked in the show notes, but that has all of my contact information and the best ways to connect with me.
Okay. Yes. Let's put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Shana. How?
Thank you, Jane.
Loved it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And for everyone out there, don't forget, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. Spiral up, spiral
out. And remember, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. You can find more inspiring episodes on 14 different platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, and empoweredhealth.com. Be a part of Thrive Tribes. Be the change in Thrivevolution at thrivetribehub.com. And join me and my fellow changemakers at Health Tribe, Body, Mind, and Soul on Facebook. Spiral up, spiral out.